don't look at life as something fixed, and don't look at yourself as something that's trapped in a box of your own judgment and other people's beliefs. There is so much more to this world. And the only way to access the best version of you is to release these preconceived notions of who you think you are and who others are.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today is amazing. And how could you not be with your name being happy? Happy Ali is the author of The Intuition Bible, How and When to Tap into Your Inner Wisdom, which just came out. It's available everywhere. I can't wait to talk to him about it. He studied psychology at UCLA. Calls himself a prophetic dreamer. We got to ask about that. A certified master NLP practitioner, certified master clinical hypnotherapist, and the host of the Happy Insights podcast. There's more to Happy's story, but I'm not going to share it with you because I want to hear it in his own words. Happy, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard. I am so excited to be on your show, and I'm excited what we're going to talk about and where this conversation leads us.
The conversation is going to be cool. I have to ask, because I would be doing the audience a disservice if I didn't. Tell me about your name, Happy. Let's talk about that.
So my name came from a self-induced near-death experience, some experience that I had where my body didn't quite die, but my mind and my consciousness did go where people normally go when they die, because I think I released all resistance and tapped into a wealth of knowledge. And when I did that, when I came back with so much information, and I came back with a new perspective, many perspectives, understanding energy, reincarnation, our power over our lives. But the key thing that I learned was the secret to happiness, which was to change your perspective on things and try to see things in a different light. I remember saying, you know, life is basically two pools, one's full of mud and one's full of clear water. And we have the choice which one we're going to swim in. And if pretend you only had 10 seconds to live, which water are you going to dive into? And after that, something shifted in me where I just couldn't be not happy anymore, even when bad things would happen. And one day somebody called me Jolly because my first name was Ali. And another day somebody called me Happy. And then some other day someone asked me what my name was. And the natural response was Happy. And then I ended up legalizing it. But I did something, even though on all my official work, it's Happy Ali, because I love my name Ali. It has a very deep meaning, and it came from a very incredible dream somebody else had. I changed my last name to Happy and legally did it the other way around. So my children now are the Happy twins.
That's
so
cool.
I wanted that legacy to live on. And I told them, you know, one thing everyone's going to ask you is your name really Happy? And I kind of set them. All they have to say is yes.
They don't. All they have to say is yes. So if you're open to it, the clinician in me can't help but ask, you referred to the spark that led to this as a self-induced near-death experience, which to me is another way of saying you attempted suicide.
Absolutely.
What was going on in your life that at the time made you think about that?
You know, it's really interesting because a lot of times the stories you hear are the people who are just miserable and just don't want to live another day. But what happened to me was I was kind of wise for my age, and all my friends were in their 30s and 40s and late 20s. And And I noticed everybody had the same problem. They all had same problems, actually. Relationship issues, money issues, self-confidence issues. There were so many things that were similar all across the board. And it made me feel like I have to sit through this for another 70, 80 years, depending on how much I live. So I kind of was curious what the secret was, what the meaning of life was. And I was not afraid of death because to me, it was just another chapter. I had always had this deep understanding that death is just another chapter, because if it isn't, then why is everyone else experience it? So, and I was living alone in the United States. I was 17. My mom lived in Iran. And one day I just got so curious that I thought, God, I just want to skip to the next chapter. I'm one of those people that when I buy a book, I kind of want to, I read the ending and then I read the rest. So, and of course I was feeling lonely and feeling like, okay, if this is all there is, then I can just skip ahead. So I cooked a bunch of sleeping pills in my spaghetti and decided to eat it all. It was the nastiest spaghetti ever. It was bitter. It was horrible. And I don't recommend this to anybody. I don't think suicide or getting out of any situation that's unresolved will ever reap the results that you want, because the universe will have a way of bringing you right back there so you can kind of experience and learn what you were supposed to learn. So I got lucky this time because my mom is a prophetic dreamer as well. She was in Iran. I had finished the food. I had laid down, released all attachment to this world, and I heard the phone ring. And I had enough strength to push that little speaker button. And she said, I just had a dream that you didn't eat well. Promise me you're going to eat. And I made a last promise, and I'm a man of my word. So I hung up the phone, saw that little tiny bit of spaghetti left, forgot that it tasted so gross, took the last bite, it kicked my gag reflexes in and basically gave me a stomach pump. But there was enough stuff in me already for me to knock me out. And I think I just believed that I was going to die. And I went through the spiritual process of letting go, and I let go of resistance. But I still woke up in the morning, but I woke up feeling incredible. I felt like I'd never felt before. I felt more alive than before. And I had this thing that kind of validated the situation. And I had two-second precognition. So I would see a door open, someone walk in, or I was a teller. I would see a client walk up, look up, they weren't there. And then 2 seconds later, they would walk up. And that happened all day. And that was the biggest reassurance that I needed, that this was not fake. Because I would, you know, ask someone, did you see that person? They would say no, and then they would walk by. So it wasn't even me seeing, you know, it was validated by the people around me as long as I voiced what I saw. And I'm never too shy to sound crazy. So that was one of the first things I was like, okay, I had something's happening. And
I mean, this is wild, because you're 17, mm-hmm. and had your mom not called and you finished the spaghetti, which induced vomiting, you probably would have had enough sleeping pills in you to kill you. But you didn't know that, right? So you know, were completely ready to die. And as you said, go to the next step. But then you woke up and you felt amazing. And so that's when this all began for you, this journey that you're on today and all the work that you're doing to help people. I always ask people to go back in time and tell us their superhero origin story, what put them on the path today. And yours is simply that you vomited enough spaghetti that you weren't able to kill yourself. My God, that's wild. So, you know, I imagine, and I've, as a psychologist, I've seen a lot of people who attempted suicide, and for whatever reason, it didn't work. But very few of them have ever kind of had the position about it that you do, right? Like, unfortunately, in many instances, people that try once try again because they're still dealing with whatever caused them the pain that they felt they needed to end their life, because there was no visible hope for them. So you have taken a different step. And I, before we get into the book, I just want to talk about a little bit more about, you know, after that happened, specifically, you know, some key points on the journey to lead you to what you're doing today.
Well, I immediately thought that I was maybe gone. The person who was there, the soul that was there, was gone. And they had replaced me with a really wise old soul that was here to help humanity in some way. And because I couldn't understand how I could go to sleep one day with this much information and wake up with that much information. I understood a lot, but some of it was really not Google searchable as it is today. You know, I just couldn't understand that there was a world of wisdom that I had access to, which was the beginning of me knowing that there's a lot of information that you can access from within that doesn't come logically. And that was what led me on my path. But of course, you tell your friends and family you're here to help humanity at 17. What are they going to tell you? They're going to tell you you're crazy, that this is just a quick phase. You just had some hallucination. It's all going to go away. And that's why, another reason why I wanted to stamp the name on there like a tattoo, saying, no, you have no idea. And the older I get, the more I realize how valid it was. And don't ever call yourself happy unless you want the universe to test you over and over and over and over to make sure you meant it. Because I've been through hell and back, I feel like. But when I go through hell, I always see the bright light of the back or the heaven or whatever. So I always have this beacon of light to look, you know, to find my way back. And whether it's my name or my knowledge or my wisdom. But I always know that it's not the end all. I lost my son when he was 4.5 in 2014, and that was the hellest moment that I've ever had. But I always knew that everything was okay, and we'll get into that story more. But that was pretty much the worst pain I ever went through. And just knowing what I know allowed me to come out of it to a point where I teach happiness and joy to people after I've lost my child. And people would say, oh, I could understand why this could happen to you. And I'd be like, why? What do you mean? They're like, well, you're just equipped to deal with this. I'm like, that is not what you want to tell somebody who just lost their kid. But I understood it was they were trying to be kind, but it didn't seem very kind at that time.
So I want to stay with the story because, you know, we're here and it's powerful. So take us through it. How, if you're comfortable, how did your son pass? And then let's move forward there.
Well, I'll give you like a little brief, like pre-story, I guess, a little precursor to how he was born. Even I was living my life as a, you know, in 2008, just a party animal, doing makeup, not doing what I was meant to do, and not following my calling. I was trying to be happy by example. And one night I went to sleep and there was like a narrator that said, you're having a kid, you're having a son. And I thought, nah, that's not happening. I'm gay and I don't have money. Not happening. They showed me one of my best friends who was a lesbian with a wife and a two-year-old daughter. They just showed me the best friend, but I'm just giving you a little backstory of who they were. Their daughter was my goddaughter, and she was in labor, and she said, you know, obviously she needed to go get help to get this baby out. And as soon as I said, let's go to the hospital, her wife comes around from behind her and says, happy I got this, sits her down, hands me this baby boy, and I hold my child for the first time. And if you've ever held a child for the first time and it's yours, the emotions are overwhelming. And I remember meeting my son for the first time, waking up, calling my best friend, saying, hey, we had a boy, and it's real, you know, knowing my dreams. And she said, well, we're not really planning on having a baby, and we definitely don't want to know the dad because we already have some other complications with the other father who is non-existent for my goddaughter, their daughter. So 6 months later, they came to me and they said, hey, we want you to be the donor. I said, hey, I already dreamt this. It's going to be a boy and it's going to be easy. So if we do it at home with a turkey baster style kind of thing, we don't try more than 3 times and we just let it be as natural as possible with it not being a natural conception. And if he is born, then I also want to be the father for our goddaughter because it would be fair if they both had a father. So we agreed, and about 10 and a half months or 12 months later, she had our son. So then we became this happy 5 family. Then life was perfect. I felt like my dream and my intuition led me to this wonderful life. And then 4 years later, or 4.5 years later, I had a dream that my dad and my best friend died, a different best friend. And I call my friend up. I'm like, hey, two people are going to die. She's like, you and your dreams. And I thought, hey, me and my dreams is how we ended up with this family. And 2.5 months later, I had another dream of a car accident. And it was a woman in the front, a guy in the back. And they said their goodbyes. And I woke up and I'm like, holy, something's happening. And it didn't dawn on me that my daughter and my son and my best friend were driving from somewhere that day. They were on a trip. And at 5 o'clock that day or 6 o'clock, I got a call and they said there was an accident. Your best friend and your son didn't make it, but your daughter is in critical care because she probably won't make it. So that's when my label as a prophetic dreamer was basically validated across the board, because I tell my dreams to everyone. And, you know, the birth one, they could have said you made that happen. The death one, it was really out of my hands. And then I went home. We went to the Sacramento that day to see, I'm thinking I'm going to see my son's body or see, I get there and he's gone, doesn't exist anymore. And my daughter's in ICU. I can't see her. And I just said, bring me some Tylenol PM. I want to know what's going on. Because part of our gift is we get to talk to our dead family when they die, usually. So they gave me some Tylenol PM. I knocked out and I hear my son and he's laughing and he's just having a good time. He's like, Daddy, I'm okay. And Faith is going to be okay, my daughter. And so that was kind of this sense of peace that I had that he was going to be okay. And it really didn't diminish the physical pain of grief, but it did give me this connection and hope of there is something more. And he continued showing up in the dreams, guiding me step by step. The day I was supposed to see his body, he showed me the bruises that he was going to have on his body in advance. So I was prepared. He showed me everything. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's like, you're having another baby. And I said, no way. Like, there's nothing anyone can do that would convince me to have another child, because I had just gotten to UCLA the day after he died. And I was just like, there's no way. I can barely like think about like passing my classes. And then he showed me this curly haired baby one day, and I was holding him, and there was a straight haired baby, which I thought was him. And he kept showing them to me and showing them to me and showing them to me. And one day it was like, now is the time. So now I have my 7.5-year-old twins. And everything was guided to me, through me. And I live a life that is a direct result of me following my gut, my intuition, my inner voice. So it makes me feel very qualified to write a book. And that's just the big stuff and the big, big things that make me seem like I know what I'm talking about. The real, real juice, the real use of intuition or inner wisdom comes on a day-to-day basis and how to make better decisions and not drive yourself crazy. But that's my story.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. Well, it's powerful, and you talk about things that many of us can't understand, right? Like, I think we all have had hunches, but few of us can relate to being able to communicate with deceased relatives and such. So, obviously, this story that you've been sharing with us is the backdrop for why you wrote the Intuition Bible, and the subtitle is How and Why to tap into your inner wisdom. I want to talk about the why before we talk about the how. And so, you know, obviously, you know, aside from you know, knowing which game to bet on at a casino, right? Like, why? Talk to us about why intuition matters, and then we want to talk about how it works.
So if you look at our bodies as a three-dimensional tool that only exists within the realm of the five senses, it doesn't really make sense. There's no why. But if you look at us through the lens of even quantum physics or the spiritual world of the multidimensional reality, which actually quantum physics does that too, and know that we exist in multiple realities at once that exists on a plane that knows more than this world does. And also for people who believe in, who are spiritual enough and they believe they have a soul and their soul had a purpose for them and their soul is communicating with them, whether it's through spirit guides or angels or just their inner higher self or through their subconscious, whatever it is, there is an aspect of you that knows more about your life than you do and can peek into the future, can read people's body language. Now, I use the subconscious in the book because I think the subconscious is a really great way to understand the importance of intuition, because at every moment, there's about 11 million bits of data. Now, how detailed that 11 million bits is this, you know, somebody made that number up. But what we're able to, so that much data is being put into our system at every moment. And it's being generalized, distorted, and deleted, but still stored into our system. But we're only able to process about 150 bits of data per second. So about 11 million bits of data is being stored and deleted from our conscious awareness. That's huge. That means that by the time we've been talking, hundreds of millions of data has been, we're not aware of it, but it gets stored into our supercomputer, what I call our subconscious AI, basically, where all this information is being accessed, or not accessed, stored. And then if you learn the language of your subconscious, now we're not even talking about the woo-woo spiritual stuff. If you learn how to communicate with your subconscious, which comes through dreams, hunches, feelings, gut feelings, all sorts of ways that it's different for every single person, you can actually check in and ask your subconscious about something that either happened before or something that went unnoticed by you, because the only thing that was came to your awareness was the 167, 150 something bits of data. So when I'm talking to you, for example, right now, your body language is being picked up by my subconscious more than my conscious mind. My conscious mind is noticing you're looking at me, and you're agreeing with me maybe a little bit here and there, but my subconscious picks up on everything, because, you know, communication happens, 55% of communication happens through body language, about 38% happens through tone, and 7% happens through words. So when we communicate with people, we're mostly listening to their words, but the subconscious is picking up everything else. So wouldn't it be great if after our conversation I said, hey, was Dr. Richard actually believing a word that I said? Or was he like genuinely interested in what I was saying? And check in with a resource that I have that is aware of way more than I was. Or if there's a question, if something coming up and I have to make a decision, that we're not even talking about the woo-woo. My subconscious knows everything I've ever wanted, all my desires, where I'm going, where my blocks are. It knows everything. What if I could ask and say, hey, is this decision in alignment with the things that I want and aligned with my capabilities that I have access to right now, and get an actual answer once you learn the languages of the subconscious? It's like having an extra friend that has an agenda, just like all your friends do and all your politicians do, but its agenda is your happiness and well-being. And so it just adds one more voice to the peanut gallery, to everybody else that's out there. So you have another point of reference to choose from. So that's, to me, is the why. Why wouldn't it be great to have another source of information? But it comes with a problem, because we are designed to survive as humans. So our job is not, you know, our body's built to survive. And our five senses have to be online at all times to be able to make sure that we're not eaten by a tiger or something doesn't happen or we don't fall off a cliff. So in the intuitive world, as it can never be as loud or as our five senses are. So the five senses are for survival, including our instincts, which sometimes feel like gut feelings. And then our intuition, which is designed for thriving. And once we have the other stuff down a little bit, then we learn to quiet the mind and access to the part of us that's quiet. It's a whisper. And that whisper allows us to thrive while all the other stuff allows us to survive. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, as you're used the term subconscious, we're talking about intuition. I can't help but think about really one of the seminal figures in psychology, Carl Jung, talked about a collective unconscious, that there's this wisdom that's out there that all of us can tap. And people will then put that through the lens of whatever makes sense to them. Is that God? Is that their guardian angel? Is that, you know, is it karma throwing things in their face? Whatever. There's different ways of looking at it. But, you know, at its core, intuition is a guiding light in a cave, basically. So I've had other guests on that have talked about intuition in different ways. Your intuition is clearly something that's guided you your whole life, shows up in your dreams, right? Like, you know, most people don't have these experiences, but talk to us about how to tap into that inner wisdom, because that is, I think, something that any of us can do.
So I don't think I'm special because I dream, and I don't think I'm special because I have intuitive abilities. I think that every single person comes equipped with all of it. We have dominant qualities that tend to override and overpower the other ones. But I was raised in a family that fostered the dreams. They actually talked about the dreams. They thought it was important enough to even consider talking about it or noting it. So as I mentioned before, everything gets whittled down to 160 something bits of data. Now, your belief system is what determines what gets filtered and what is brought to your attention. So let's say your belief system is, I am not someone who's intuitive, or there's no use in intuition. And I have plenty of family who believe that from the other side of the family. And if that's your belief system, guess what? Your subconscious is going to be like, I'm not even going to bring any intuitive messages to this 167 bits of data. There is no point, because that's going to throw this person's equilibrium off. It's going to throw their belief system off. So I'm just going to stick to what is relevant for this person's life. It's only until you have a desire for learning about something more and realizing that every single person has this inner gift. There's not a single person that doesn't dream. But as a psychologist, you understand dreams serve a lot of different purposes. They work out your you know, it's like your filing cabinet at nighttime to take all the stuff away. It shows you where you're at mentally and gives you scenarios of stuff. But then there are deeper layers when you go into deeper REM that take you to other dimensions. Now, I haven't done any research on this, but I'm living proof, because it happens over and over and over and over again. And if you hang out with me long enough, I have a uncle who's an engineer, and he just believes I'm the only person who can do this, because he's like, this is not true except for Happy. And I said, well, thank you for that. I appreciate it, but it is true for me. And then he does it. So he'll have a moment where he'll say, he did this to me last year. He said, oh my God, I had a dream that my granddaughter couldn't find her shoes. And I woke up to her crying because she didn't like her shoes. And I said, do you know that was a prophetic dream? And she said, no, that was just, she was in the dream. She couldn't find the shoes. In real life, she was, didn't like her shoes. I said, do you see the correlation there? And he's like, nope, not at all. So first of all, you have to have the desire. Then you have to include it in your belief system that it's not reserved for a few. And then you have to figure out what your path of least resistance is. Some people, they're really good with a gut feeling. Now, I have twin boys. One is really in touch with his feelings in a different way. And one's a mental. He thinks a lot. One feels, one thinks. So when I do some of these exercises on them and I put them on stage and I have them do the exercises, one gets one exercise down like that. And the other one, I'll look at him. I'm like, did you get anything? He says, nope, barely. And I love that. Like, he's so willing. And I said, and then we do a different one and the other one gets it and the other one doesn't get it. So the good thing is that we don't just have a sixth sense. We have a corresponding inner sense to every outer sense and then some. So, but the way the book is designed is as a textbook for all. Wherever you are in your stage of intuitive development, you can try them all and see which one works and then start focusing on the one that works and then master that. And guess what? As soon as your conscious mind or your belief system says, hey, I have access to more than this common, you know, this five senses world, then your other senses start to multiply. And then they just, because it's part of your belief system now. So belief system, putting a crack in your foundation, that's how it is. But first you have to have the desire and pick up this book, for example, and start reading the stories and then just getting into it. I tell people, most people that already open up, paid $20 for a book and are already reading it, they're already 10 steps ahead. And then, you know, I try to speak in a way that speaks to all the spiritual people and the scientific minds alike, because I really think that in order to live a happy life, you need to find the balance. And if you're just trying to be spiritual, should have stayed dead and been spiritual. And so, like, you got to find the balance to the both worlds, because we are physical beings and spiritual beings at the same time. And there's so much more to us. And we're realizing that when we walk into a room, are you aware of all the channels and the frequencies and the cell phone signals that are in that room? No, it was only when somebody decided, made something that was a cell phone that made us be able to talk to each other, like in the mountains. So, but we needed the device. And the good thing is we have this device built inside of us. And I actually use the cell phone as an example, as an analogy of our bodies, because we're transmitters, we have apps running through us, we're receivers. And somebody has to do it first. And then all of a sudden, it's like the 4-minute mile. And then you have to have the curiosity to do it. And if you do it, but let me tell you something, living an intuitive world or life really does ease the pain of a lot of uncertainty. And uncertainty seems to be the main cause of a lot of pain, unnecessary pain. And I think that's where it comes to, that's where it's really important. And it becomes very relevant, especially in the world now when uncertainty is everywhere and there's too much information coming at us at once. We have to have an inner compass to tell us what news network to listen to that's good for us. Whose advice to follow. And there's so much noise coming at us and we've got to have an internal compass or else we're just going to be at the mercy of everyone else.
So I like that. As you've been talking, I can't help but think of some of the experiments that Jose Silva did. And for those that don't know Jose Silva, it's fascinating. Look him up on Wikipedia. This guy had a psychic connection to his daughter. And he may have had other children, but the daughter comes to mind. So so much so that the army basically recruited this guy to create what was their first psychic program. And they would do real experiments. It can measure things. And so his daughter would know. And he taught his daughter how to do this stuff. So, like, his daughter would know, you know, if he's in the other room, what he's holding, and could describe the object and all these things. And so, you know, if you're listening to this thinking this sounds interesting, but this is a little too much for me, I would encourage you to be a little open to it, because there is science behind some of this stuff. And our government has spent a lot of years and a lot of money trying to crack this code for decades. Decades they've been doing this. So I don't think there's any question that having a guiding compass during incredibly uncertain times is a great idea. And I know you said you've written your book for those that are, you know, it's a really a book for everybody. If you're really religious or spiritual, it's for you. If you're more science-minded and a bit of a skeptic, it's for you too. But give us a few techniques just for starting places that if somebody's saying, you know what, this sounds right. I think everybody can think about a time in their life where maybe they had a hunch or a gut instinct. We're all told when we're taking multiple choice exams that, you know, trust your gut. Your first instinct is usually the right answer, right? So give us a couple of things that people can do to start that journey to learn how to use that intuition.
I'm going to use the gut as an example because the gut is another form of our brain that's, so that way I'm still sticking to some sort of science. There's so much more, but I think this is a fun one. This is one that one of my twins can do and I can do really easily. And when I do a seminar, about 75% of the people can do this. Guys sometimes used to have a harder time, but now guys seem to be the good students. It's just they don't show up as much in my seminars. But the last time, all the guys had an experience. So here's the thing. So this is my favorite technique, and it requires no tool whatsoever. And it is to scan your upper body, and I'm going to tell you what to do. So this is my shoulder, and it goes all the way down to my belly, my pelvis. So I want you to close your eyes. Now, the reason we close our eyes is because when your eyes are open, there's a lot of information coming through your visual senses. And it keeps your brainwave really going fast at high beta, or especially if you're watching TV or your phone. And the intuitive world works on alpha, which is slower brainwave, and sometimes theta, but theta, you're already almost dreaming. So you want to get your brainwaves to slow down. And one of the fastest way to do it is to shut off your loudest outer sense, which is your visual field. So I always say, close your eyes. Ask yourself a question that you know is a yes. Like, am I living on the moon? I'm living on planet Earth right now. Something where you for sure know is a yes. And then when you're doing that, just stay still and scan your upper body. And it could be anywhere. If someone's doing Reiki, they might feel it in their hands. But just scan your body, see if there's any sensation, any contraction, any release. Anything, doesn't matter what it is. And then you ask like five more yes questions that are different. And then you see what lights up. Generally, the same area will light up. I won't tell you where because everyone's different. And then what you do is you shake it off, you close your eyes again, and then you begin with no questions. And you ask the same question, a question that you are for sure to know, you're for sure to know is a no. And then you see what lights up. Or contracts, or nothing happens. Sometimes for people, yeses, nothing happens, and noes, or noes, nothing happens. Just see what it is. And after four or five times, you get an understanding of where a no shows up in your body. Then ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Hey, am I on the right path when it comes to this person? And then see what lights up. And you will, if you are somebody who lit up during those five questions each time, you will for sure have an answer. And that is so useful. That has gotten me out of so many jams. It's put me to sleep. In the middle of the night when I'm so freaked out and worried, I will ask the questions. I'll ask 20 questions that I don't know the answers to, and I will just watch my body just do its thing. Now, I got to be honest. If you're having indigestion, if you're hungover, if you're having any issues with your stomach, or if you have anxiety, which is a survival thing, or if you're having extreme worry, which is a survival thing, that will overpower any gut feeling. So whatever, don't trust it unless you really have gotten used to it or have done it so many times. So generally, if I'm having any issues with my stomach or anything strong, I use a different one. There's one that I always thought was a joke, was the pendulum. The pendulum I thought was just silly, silly joke. I thought that makes no sense. But then I realized that when you hold a pendulum, pendulums, when you have something like, here, I'll take this off. When you had this, I really thought was a joke. Honestly, I thought it was just like a little toy. So if you promise not to move your hand, and I usually rest it somewhere so that it doesn't, my wrist doesn't move, I make sure it's still, and then I ask what a yes is, make sure it's still. And then the micro muscles in your fingers, which are attached to your subconscious, you don't consciously move those, will create a movement, which could be a yes or a no. And then ask a question after you've determined what your yes or no is. Some people, it's one thing. But this is generally asking questions from your subconscious mind. It's kind of like muscle testing. And these are like the very basic ones I'm showing that are really, really basic. But I always thought this was just a silly game. And then I started using it. And then when you tune into higher frequencies, so here's the thing. We are, just like your television, receivers and transmitters. That's why we're more like the cell phone. And depending on what frequency you're tuned into is what channel you're getting. So if you're able to, through meditation or through your energy, tap into higher frequencies that exist outside of the realm of the five senses and outside of the realm of time and space, then you can use that same tool or the same tool, ask questions that are far beyond your understanding or what the subconscious could ever conjure up, and ask big, big questions, and it'll give you answers. And I know yours shows tends to be less, I think you said it was less woo-woo, right?
Yeah, generally so.
Yeah, so I'm not really going to go into that world so much, but there is access to so much.
Well, it's interesting. I had mentioned Jose Silva, the Silva method. He called it the Silva method of mind control. The whole purpose of that program is to train you how to put your brain and throw it into alpha, right? So you mentioned alpha. That's the state where we're, you know, most capable of doing this work. So pretty interesting stuff. Before we wrap up, I do want to give you a moment to talk about your podcast, Happy Insights. What is a listener going to get tuning into that?
It's kind of fun. I say it's blurring the lines of science and spirituality because that's who I am. It does seem to be spirituality with a sprinkle of science. And some of it I literally just download overnight. I wake up, I'm like, oh, I gotta make this. And I've never heard of it in my life before. And some of it is stuff that I've studied because I've studied more than... I've always been a lifelong student. But what it is, what the purpose of my show is to improve your mental health, just for you to learn tricks and improve your relationships, your friendships, and also just give you some, I don't know, informational candy that you can just absorb and see what other people's perspectives are. I used to have a lot of guests on my shows because it got hijacked by publicists throwing people at me. And I was like, okay, let me just take this guest. And they all had to align with my message. But this season, I have made it into a 20-minute podcast per episode covering something quick. It's just me talking, giving you something that you might have never heard of before or you might have heard of before. But it's whatever it is to help. I know there's someone out there that needs to hear it. And it's fun to listen to. So check it
out. Perfect. Well, we'll link to it in the show notes. Happy, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'm so grateful you spent some time with us today. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. What is your biggest helping, Happy, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
I think the most important thing that I like to tell people is that don't look at life as something fixed and don't look at yourself as something that's trapped in a box of your own judgment and other people's beliefs. There is so much more to this world. And the only way to access the best version of you is to release these preconceived notions of who you think you are and who others are. Just play in this world, be more curious, bring back the child within you that didn't care about results and just played. Because there is so much more to this world and you're never alone. There's always lots of, whether it's your subconscious or your spirit guides or God or angels, you always have eternal support. And it only can be accessed when you open your mind up to it and allow that information to come through. because life is hard enough to do it on your own. So let's not do it on our own.
Well said. Happy, tell us where people can learn more about you online.
So you can go to my Instagram, which is Happy Insights Official, or go to my, which has my link tree, which has all everything linked to it, or happyinsights.net, where I teach courses and work one-on-one with people. But once you find my link tree, which is Linktree Happy Insights, Linktree/Happy Insights, my whole world is on there. And feel free to DM me. And sometimes some of the DMs, once I actually see them, will end up being a video on my social media because I love the question so much.
Very cool. And we'll have everything happy in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. So we got you covered if you're in the car. Happy, again, this was cool. Thank you for joining us today. Really enjoyed the talk.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard.
If you like what you heard, if you're inspired, if you're curious, if you want to explore your own intuition, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your social media feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.